For federal agencies, social media has long been a normal part of daily communications. What they actually do with social media is not precisely what they promised. Feedback from the public, back and forth, dialogue over rulemaking. That's according to Michael Hertz, professor at the Cardozo School of Law in New York, and he joins me now. Professor Hertz, great to have you on.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
All right, so you've done kind of an in-depth look at social media by the federal government, and let's begin with why you say so that the train of thought on the timeline of following this kind of stuff stopped as far back as September of 2011.
The reason it stopped in 2011 is that by that point, it was no longer exciting. And I say the timeline you're talking about is something you can still find up online, tracking novel, cool, exciting uses by federal agencies of social media. And it began, the first item, somewhat pathetically, is the Easter egg, White House Easter egg rule during the second Bush administration, which was live streamed, and at a time when that seemed amazing. And then the timeline gets more and more crowded. And then by 2011, the effort to sort of record these novel uses of social media is abandoned precisely because they are no longer so novel. They're not exciting. There's nothing interesting. Agency use of social media by 2011 is ubiquitous.
The other thing that you have pointed out here is that social media use by government in general is not two-way, but simply one-way from the government out. Now, the different pieces of social media are two-way. Tell us what you mean by that.
What distinguishes social media, what gets fancy theorizers excited about social media, is that it can be two-way. That unlike, say, a website, which is just a static presentation that's posted by the host and readers go to and look at, but can't in any way participate or interact or contribute to, social media allows that back and forth. And that's what makes it seem so exciting. It's a challenge to figure out how to use that if you're a government agency. There's a potential there, but in many areas, it's unrealized. Now, I should quickly say that in some areas, it's been great, more so at the local level than at the federal level, but somewhat at the federal level. And what I would want to do is distinguish the government as a provider of services for customers from the government as a sovereign or regulator or policymaker. As a provider of services, governments at all levels have made really effective use of social media, including as a way of getting information from the public. So you want to, you know, the local municipality wants to know where a pothole is or what red light is no longer functioning or where garbage is piling up. There are a lot of apps now that allow people quickly to submit that information. It's fantastic. It's a huge success story. Where the challenge is how effectively and appropriately to integrate social media into the policy-making side as opposed to the service-providing side. So on there, you know, what you find is agencies are spending a huge amount of effort getting their story out, trying to control the narrative, letting people know what they are up to, and in essence, you know, selling. And that is a kind of publicity effort. The federal agency publicity, or if you want, propaganda effort these days is most importantly focused on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on social media generally.
We're speaking with Michael Hertz, professor at the Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University. I've noticed that after the advent of the Affordable Care Act, this is when I noticed a lot of social media work by the federal government to try to get people to buy into the whole idea. And some of it seemed purely informational, and some of it had a slightly, almost Maoist type of quality to it. Or am I reading too much into it?
Maoist seems a strong term to me. I don't know that I would use
That's probably overstating it.
But I think both those things are absolutely in play, and it's a very challenging line to draw, either as an observer or as the agency. You know, there are a couple of things going on here. One is, forget social media for a second. There's been a long controversy and dispute about to what extent agencies should be engaged in publicity at all. Okay, forget the format or the mechanism. So we just marked the 100th anniversary of the first federal law about this. Back in 1913, more than 100 years ago, the Department of Agriculture posted a ad asking for a new position for someone as a publicity agent. And it was an interesting ad. For one thing, it had to be male. To modern ears, that's what seems a little most peculiar about this ad. But setting that aside, the publicity agent had to be someone who was well-connected with newspapers so that this agent could write stories and get them placed into newspapers in order to promote the activities of the Department of Agriculture. Exactly, you know, what you're worried about is a tendency towards Maoism. This is 1913, and it caught the attention of some people in the House of Representatives, and Congress passed a law, which is still on the books, which prohibits federal agencies from hiring publicity agents. You just can't do it. It's against federal law to hire a publicity agent. Now, of course, what you do is you hire someone who does that kind of work and give them a different name, but that has been true for years. I have a book on my shelf from 1939 called Government Publicity, which talks about the many ways in which government agencies are engaged in publicity efforts, notwithstanding the bar on hiring a publicity agent. So this is a long-standing controversy. The other relevant piece of federal law is, since the 1950s, Congress has put in essentially every single appropriations measure a prohibition on the use of any dollars appropriated for, quote, publicity or propaganda purposes. So agencies are not allowed to spend money for publicity or propaganda, and that's a long-standing principle. So the question is, you know, why exactly? What's so wrong about it? I think three things are probably at work there. One is it just sort of seems unseemly. Now, in a world with political campaigns as robust and vigorous and unrestrained as ours, it's a sudden switch to say that once an administration is in place, it can't do any of that. Second is just a sense that it's a waste of money. You ought to be spending your time and effort working, not bragging. And if you do good work, it will speak for itself. And that's somewhat true, but I don't think completely true. Good work and, unfortunately, bad work are both often hidden from the public. I think the third thing, and what really bothers people the most, and it's captured a little bit in this word propaganda, is that you worry that these efforts are corrupting the marketplace of ideas. And in two ways. One, that they're just false or slanted. And secondly, that you don't quite know who's telling you what. What's the source? And of course, that is just a fundamental problem with the internet. What's the source? You can find anything on the internet, and you don't know whether to believe it or not. And this concern also predates the internet and predates social media, as reflected legally or doctrinally in the following way. The appropriations rider I mentioned prohibits propaganda. That provision is overseen by and enforced, to the extent it's enforced at all, by the Government Accountability Office, the GAO. And it, for decades, has taken the position that the only propaganda that's prohibited is covert propaganda. So you see all these references to covert propaganda. That's not actually in the statute. It's GAO's longstanding interpretation. Because what it's worried about is when an agency says something and you don't know the agency is behind it. That's what makes it covert. And I think that's the most problematic aspect of government publicity.
Michael Hertz is professor at the Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You can read his blog and share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.